Our next guest says somewhere along the way, parenting in America became a religion, and it's putting a death squeeze on American marriages, from not being able to admit that your kid may sometimes be unlikable, to restricting what parents can do even in their off time. Are we letting our kids define us and our relationships?
Danielle Teller joins us now. She's a physician specializing in intensive care and lung medicine. She's been on faculty at the University of Pittsburgh and Harvard University, and she's the author of the book Sacred Cows, The Truth About Divorce and Marriage. Danielle, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you.
So what happened to parenting in the last couple of decades that it's become a religion?
I think that our society has become less tolerant in some ways of different perspectives on parenting. And it's not really how one parents that we take any exception to. It's really just this idea that everybody must conform to the same principles, the same beliefs and ideas about parenting. And I think there's a lot of fear about speaking out when your feelings or your particular situation doesn't conform to those socially held values or sacred cows about parenting.
And those values, as you write, are something along the line of children first, parenting is awesome.
Absolutely. That's right. I think it's hard to admit that parenting isn't always the most fulfilling task in our lives. And I think that the subject of the article that we wrote was around Islet Waldman's article that where she said that she loved her husband more than her children. And I think everybody is certainly welcome to have their own opinion about that. And certainly all families are different. But I thought what was interesting about it was that she was really shouted down by America. People thought that this was a terrible thing for her to say and that it somehow made her a bad parent. And I think there should be more open public discourse.
That was a really interesting moment when Islet Waldman made those remarks about loving her husband more than her children. And she also sort of, you know, backed that up by saying if her husband died, she wasn't sure she could recover. You know, if one of her children passed away, she would have her husband to lean on. I don't know if that made it better or worse for people, but I mean, it's part of the problem that people had with her that she wasn't saying something taboo, not just that, but she was also saying, you know, sort of love comes in different sizes and the bigger chunk of her love went to her husband.
Yeah, I think people really did take exception to that because it's part of the religion of parenting that you cannot love anyone more than your children. And I don't think it's right or wrong to love your child or your spouse more. But I think the idea that we're not even open as a society to allowing that that could happen is something that we should question and think about.
Well, another angle on this religion of parenting, as you call it, is a lack of honesty. You say that parents are unwilling and it's unacceptable for parents to say something negative about their kid, like, sometimes my kid's a jerk or something like that.
Yeah, I think we got feedback on the article from people, especially from educators, who said that's actually not the case, that in their experience, parents do feel quite comfortable calling out their kids and naming their flaws. So maybe that wasn't correct, but my personal experience is that it's very hard to say negative things about your children. And maybe this is part of just being in the Facebook generation where everybody's life is perfect and you need to only talk about what is positive. But I find that people are quite reluctant to talk about problems that their kids are having or problems that they're having with their kids. And this idea that your child may not be perfect or that there might be things that you not only find slightly irritating, but things about your children that really you don't fundamentally like is not, I don't feel like it's very socially acceptable to talk about those things. And yet we can say those things about our spouses or our parents or other people in our lives. It's just only children are granted this immunity where we can't talk about their flaws in very honest ways.
It's an interesting point. I was thinking back to the days when I spent more time with mothers in groups when my children were younger, and it seems like parents would say difficult things about their kids, about them not being likable or about parenting being hard, but they would have to follow it up with something really positive. Like, of course I wouldn't trade little Johnny for anything in the whole world. I wouldn't want it any other way. So you could say those things, but you had to temper them a lot.
Yeah.
This it reminds me of research I've seen where people cite parenting as one of the central things that makes them happy. But when scientists did or researchers did time studies, in fact, the day-to-day job of parenting often was frustrating and made people unhappy. So how is this part of just trying to square these two things in our minds, the daily drudgery versus the ideal of the big picture?
I don't know. If I had the answer to that, I would write a book about that. But I think it's very interesting. You know, Daniel Gilbert wrote in his book, Stumbling on Happiness, about how study after study has shown that when you ask parents how happy they are, they're less happy than people who don't have children until their children leave home, and then they sometimes become happier. So maybe grandchildren are the answer to happiness. Maybe it's grandkids that make us happy. I think it's very hard to tease apart those things. If somebody were in the middle of climbing Mount Everest and you said, how happy are you right now as you're losing your fingers to frostbite, they would probably say, not very happy, but not as happy as if you asked them when they were sitting on the couch with a bag of nacho chips watching Game of Thrones. But I think that they would be happy that they had climbed Mount Everest, and they would feel proud of it, and it would give their life meaning, and they would probably value that experience much more than watching Game of Thrones. So happiness is a thorny subject. But I think the point that we all talk about parenthood like it will make people happy, that doesn't square with the data, is actually important to keep in mind.
There's a funny part in your piece where you write about how those baby on board signs that everyone had for a while were kind of a flag about the way attitudes were changing. What do you think about those signs?
Well, I've always thought that they were a little bit goofy. I think that we as a culture really idolize babies and children, and it's hard not to. I mean, they are so cute. They really are. But we were those once, and they will become us, and it's all a continuum. And I think putting so much value on childhood and youth does everyone a little bit of a disservice, because when those people grow up, to some extent, they're gaining more value, you know, as they learn more, as they become contributing members of society, we should value them, if not as more, at least as much as when they were babies. And yet somehow our society has started to value babies and children, I feel, more than adults. And I'm not sure that's right.
Well, here's Jill wrote on our Facebook page, the Central Time Facebook page. She had a lot to say, actually. It gets us into a couple topics. Let's start here. She says she was pregnant with her first child, and she's a dog trainer. People were asking when she was going to get rid of her dogs and give up her job playing with dogs so she could devote 100% of her life to her children. Not only was she keeping her two dogs at the time, she was on a waiting list for a third. So there's an expectation for Jill, anyway, that she was going to give up part of a thing that is central to her career and her personality in favor of child raising.
Yeah, I think that is a good example of how we have made it a bit of a religion, that you're expected to completely efface yourself and not pursue the other things besides your children that give your life meaning, whether that be love of your spouse or your career or your dogs or the other things that you love in life. And yet children, they grow up to be adults. They leave us. They go on, hopefully, to have their own independent lives. They will love other people more than us. And should we really be shelling out our lives until there's nothing left? And then when they leave us, we have nowhere to go after that. That doesn't seem right. And I'm not sure that it's really the best thing for children either, because the world is not going to treat them like little gods once they grow up and leave us. And so maybe it's good for them to learn that they have to put other people's interests before their own sometimes, or that they can't have what they want at the moment that they want it all of the time. Maybe those are actually good skills for them to learn as children.
We're talking with Danielle Teller right now. She's the author of the book Sacred Cows, The Truth About Divorce and Marriage, talking about a trend that our guest sees where parenting in modern America, she says, has been turned into a religion, and it's putting a tough squeeze on American marriages.
And we want to hear from you. Does this ring any bells with what you've seen in your own life, maybe your own family? Has parenting become, in effect, a religion in America? Is there too much pressure on parenting first, the children first, forget your own life, forget your spouse? Or can we still acknowledge difficult things about parenting and our kids? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking about modern parenthood with Danielle Teller. She's the author of the book Sacred Cows, The Truth About Divorce and Marriage. And one of those sacred cows we're looking at today is parenting. And the claim from our guest that she sees is parenting becoming a religion, people putting their own lives on hold and not willing to acknowledge some of the difficult truths about parenting.
And we want to hear from you. Does this sound familiar to you? Do you feel like pressure either from yourself or from outside to put the children first at the cost of hobbies, career, your spouse? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go to our phones now. We've got a call from Adriana in Bayfield. Hi there.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I kind of wanted to jump in just because as a 24-year-old woman, I kind of run up against this idea that eventually I'm going to have to give up like some part of my career or all of my career in order to have children and raise and be a parent. And I couldn't do both. Like I would have to take off years of my life in order to raise kids and be an attentive mom. And like, I personally run up against a problem with that because my mom was a single parent and she didn't do that for me. So I kind of wonder why society would push that, you know?
Okay, interesting, Adriana. Thank you so much for your call and for sharing your thoughts there. Danielle, what do you think about that call? Is that typical what Adriana is going through?
I think it's very typical. And I think that, you know, I'm not a psychologist and I'm not an expert in parenting, but I do know that most of the work that has been done looking at parenting has shown that there are really diminishing returns in terms of who your child turns out to be. So when you look at twin studies, when twins are separated at birth, identical twins who have the same genetics and are put into different families, it's pretty clear that their biology, their genetics has a very large impact on who they grow up to be. And that environment is important to the point, as long as the child is getting love and is not being abused or neglected, the additional importance of going to every little league game or getting your child to play violin or hovering over them when they're doing their homework has really not been shown to have a great impact on how the child turns out. And so I think it's a shame that our society has adopted this attitude that we need to put absolutely everything into our children and take away from other parts of our lives in order to do that. I don't know why this has happened. I'm not really sure where this attitude has come from, but I do think it's a shame.
Do you think that attitude, this sort of binary option of having a career or having a family, is getting more entrenched? Because in the past year or two, we've seen all of these high-profile women coming out writing pieces saying, you know what, you really can't have it all. I tried and I failed and my children suffered and so I'm going back, you know, to mothering. We've seen that with women writing really popular stories, for example, in The Atlantic and elsewhere. So do you think it's getting better or worse?
I don't know enough about the overarching social trends to say anything really definitive. I do think that we tend as humans to be reactionary. So I think that, you know, when I was growing up, my mother gave up everything to stay home. And I said, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to have a career. And then a lot of my friends now whose children are getting older, my friends who had careers as their children are now teenagers and turning into young men and women are saying, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay home with my kid because I feel like that's the most important thing. So I think as a society, we tend to go a little bit back and forth as a pendulum because we see the negatives of both things. But I think if you just sort of step back and take a rational perspective and say, when there were generations of people who were raised by stay-at-home moms, did they really turn out worse or better than generations of working moms? And I would say the human race, we haven't become superhumans because of attention by our moms, and we also haven't turned into supervillains because our moms worked. So I'm not sure that it really has as much impact as we think.
Go back to our callers now. We've got Rebecca on the line in Madison. Rebecca, hi.
Hi. I have a slightly different comment. So I'll first introduce the background I'm coming from. I'm actually talking about my father, and he was not a stay-at-home dad. But the way I think this is relevant is he also as kids, we were like the center of his universe, and we clearly were like the source of his happiness, and everything he did was for us. And now that me and my sisters, we're all adults, he kind of has this expectation that we're going to return. Not an expectation, but he kind of is so hopeful that we're just going to continue to have the relationship we had when we were children, and he's going to get that satisfaction he got from parenting us. And now when we don't call enough, or we don't come in enough, and we don't have the relationship we used to have, it really is saddening him. He's in his late 70s now and is very depressed, but it's he's very clear with we could be making him happy. And we know that we were kind of the source of this happiness, and it wasn't,
Rebecca, thanks for the call. Danielle, you were saying over-parenting in a way can create unrealistic expectations for the kid. I guess this is going the other way. If you put all your happiness in the kids, you may set up unrealistic expectations for yourself as a parent down the road.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people end up feeling quite at a loss when children leave home. It's more often the mom than the dad, but it certainly could happen if it's the dad who's put his everything into raising the children and doesn't have other sources of satisfaction and happiness in his life. And it's really an unfair burden to place upon the children because they have their own lives to lead. They need to go out and find their own happiness, and they can't be expected to take care of they can't be expected to be the center of the universe for their parents for their entire lives.
Well, thank you for that call. We're going to go next to Danielle in Dodgeville. Hi there.
Hi. I was just wondering, Danielle, if you have any feeling that divorce rates being higher nowadays has been a factor in this shift in childbearing or child raising.
Okay, thank you. What do you think, Danielle?
I'm not sure if I understood the question,
whether divorce has been a factor in the shift. And I can see if Danielle is still on the line, but one factor would be, if people don't have a spouse or a partner that they're turning to for some of their happiness, their self-actualization, that it gets focused, the laser point on the child.
That's a really interesting question. I've myself have been through divorce, and so I hadn't really thought about it that way before. I guess the point of the article that we were writing was all surrounding Islet Waldman's article and had to do with her spouse. So I wasn't thinking about single parents. I don't know how much of a factor that is. Because I see many married couples putting their children ahead of everything else. I guess when you're a single parent, you don't have the competing interests of the spouse. You don't have to give up the time for your spouse. But I'm not sure it's really that different.
Interesting. Thanks for that call. We'll go now to Kathleen in Mount Vernon. Kathleen, hi.
Hi. I wanted to say that my belief is the most important relationship in a family is mom and dad. They're the primary relationship. And I think it needs to be that way for the children's own security. The kids do not want to be number one. They want to have a something to follow, something to be to show them the way, and to have loving parents who come first because they care and love about themselves. And then you don't want to have the kid like, say, mom is really special to little Johnny, well, what does that do to little Johnny? It's psychologically, emotionally. He'll know he's number one. It's terrible to do that to a child, actually.
Kathleen, thanks for the call. So the main point at the start there, Danielle, that by putting that relationship, the spousal relationship first, you're modeling a relationship for the kid and you're providing a sense of security for the kid. So ultimately, you're doing better for them in that way.
Right. That's what Islet Waldman said. She felt like she had really done her children a service by having this great love for her husband.
And is that what you think should be the model? I mean, is there a right or wrong answer in all of this?
I personally don't think that there is a right or wrong answer. I find it a little bit puzzling even to compare the love of a spouse with the love of a child. I feel it's a bit like saying, is the color magenta more intense than the taste of a tangerine orange? They're not really comparable. You have responsibilities towards your child that you do not have towards your spouse, and the type of feeling that you have is very different. But I guess all I'm saying is that we as a society should certainly be open to that, that is not wrong, that we shouldn't come down on people who say such a thing and say, that's terrible, you're a bad parent.
Danielle, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Danielle Teller. She's a physician specializing in intensive care and lung medicine, but she's also the co-author of the book Sacred Cows, The Truth About Divorce and Marriage.
Join us Friday night at 7 on Wisconsin Public Radio for the second of two gubernatorial debates sponsored by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association. The debate will feature Republican incumbent Governor Scott Walker and Democratic challenger Mary Burke. And stay with Wisconsin Public Radio immediately after the debate for live analysis and discussion. That's the WBA's gubernatorial debate. It's happening Friday night at 7 on Wisconsin Public Radio.